Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hello, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
It is brand new. I'm Mike Sweeney, not brand new, the opposite of whatever brand new is. That's me.
I'm gently warmed up leftovers.
Oh, Jesse.
Jesse Gaskell.
That's not true at all. You're piping fresh, hot out of the oven. Hello.
Hello.
I hope you had a nice week. What have you been up to?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had a week.
Ah, there you go. 7 days. Check, 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 check.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
I thought, I was like, oh, what did I do this week? And I was like, absolutely nothing. And then I realized, no, I've been trying to buy a car.
which
is worse than doing nothing.
Yeah, you mentioned you got T-boned.
Yeah,
your
I got
car got totaled.
Yeah, they totaled it out and
which sounds a lot more delicious than it is, assuming.
There's this car dealership nearby, and I've been...
Oh, did they get your phone number, and now they call you all the time?
I wish they'd call me. I just want to buy a car, and they're like, well, it's like a shell game. They're like, well, we don't have them here, but we can get them here
chain.
If you're going to buy one. And yeah, there are many... Many new games. I haven't bought a car in a while, so
yeah,
I'm fascinated by all the latest shenanigans.
Well, and I think
invented.
It's a real seller's market right now. So there's like no negotiating, which actually would be a relief to me because I'm terrible at bartering. But
I remember once I went to the Lower East Side years ago. They're like, oh, you know, on flea market you can bargain, and they'd offer prices, and I'd lower it, and they just kept going no. It's $12.99. I was like, how about it? I'd literally bargain right up to the $12.99 and then...
Yeah. And then give it...
Well, then I'd feel bad. I argued with them and then I tip them on top of it. So, very bad negotiator.
Yeah, they could smell you coming.
Yes. But buying a car is, yeah, nightmare. I might...
It is.
Just ride my bike everywhere. What have you been up to?
So you didn't end up... You haven't bought a car yet.
It's in progress. I think
if they can get one to the lot,
I don't know. He's like,
do they even have cars for you to test drive?
I can't get a straight answer out of them about where the cars are, what year they are. It's all insanity. They might just not want to sell me a car.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, they might be a money laundering joint. So, because they don't act like they really actually want to sell a
car. They care at all. Yeah.
No. Why? What have you been up to?
Not that much, but I have a little piece that came out in McSweeney's.
Oh, that's great!
This week, you saw it already. It's an infographic.
Oh, right.
That's a flow chart called "Will I Have Diarrhea?"
Yes, that's really funny.
Thank you.
Yes.
It is inspired by my life.
Okay, it's autobiographical. It's in lieu of writing a memoir. You did a flowchart of...
Yeah, I feel like it's covered most of the important stuff.
No, there are many life moments in your chart.
Yes.
Yes.
That are all diarrhea inducing.
You do get a strong sense of the author by reading it. Oh, well, that's great. So it came out this week, just in time for the holidays.
Yes, exactly.
Everyone wants more diarrhea content.
Definitely give me diarrhea.
Around the holidays. So you're filling a niche.
Well, and I'm honestly a little bit happy to have found my personal brand. Finally.
Why are they asking for more? They're like, please give us more of this content.
I think people are thirsty for diarrhea content. I know. I'm sorry. We didn't get to do a lot of that stuff on Conan because we were told he was not that into scatological humor.
Conan does not love scatological
unless
humor.
Unless he's the one doing it. I've
then
found. Then he loves it.
There's a clause buried deep in the rules of comedy for the show where it'd be like, hey, wait a minute. Why is this all of a sudden being done with gusto?
Yeah, then we went to Italy with Jordan and gave him fart sound effects on a sound machine. And that was all he did the entire time.
That's true. Well, those were special circumstances. I mean,
that's true.
You're in another country. I think anything goes. Mm-hmm. I think he felt like I'm doing scatological humor outside the United States. It doesn't count.
Right. It sort of bridges the language gap.
Right.
Just to tie it all together, I also had diarrhea on that Italy trip.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Wow.
We're eating a lot of meat and drinking that red wine.
Hey, you know, I just watched Succession.
Yes.
And I think there's a scene in Cortona where you might have gotten sick.
Oh, no way.
But certainly where we spent 2 days shooting some of my favorite scenes.
I watched the episode. Is it when they go out for the bachelorette party?
Yes, probably the bachelorette party. And I swear for a moment, I see the steps of the Cortona City Hall.
And Jordan.
Yes.
Lurking
Jordan
in the distance.
Still there, waiting to be recognized.
Yes.
He's just standing there at attention, hoping. And, hey, I love the Italy show. Thank you. Oh, really?
Oh,
thank
oh,
you very
oh,
much.
Oh, oh. Funny you should mention that.
Oh, right. I'm standing right here in Cortona.
I'm wearing a Conan sweatshirt on the exact steps where we filmed.
You know what? I have to go back and double check or not double check, but I'm pretty sure it was Cortona.
Let's just say it was.
Yeah. It was Cortona.
It was Cortona.
We have a great show today. It's the opposite of diarrhea.
Oh, wow. I love that. And I think our guest will too.
I think she'll really appreciate it.
We're talking to Courtney Thorne Smith, who recently came into the news because of her 1997 appearance on Conan alongside the late, great Norm Macdonald. People resurfaced that clip and the way that everything went off the rails and it went viral.
Again,
yes.
Yes, it's always been a popular, it's just a classic Norm Macdonald clip. He's so funny.
It is, and it builds really perfectly. It's like a comedy masterclass.
Yes. We were excited to talk to her about it and get her take on what it was like being on the guest chair that night with Norm Macdonald next to her, kind of almost taking over her interview. And
We wanted to give her a chance to talk.
Yep.
And she's very talented and funny in her own right. And I mean, you've probably seen her. She's an actress on Melrose Place, Ally McBeal, According to Jim, and a lot of other shows. So here's Courtney Thorne Smith. Well, hi, Courtney Thorne Smith.
Hi.
Do you go by all three names or do you just...
I go by Television's Courtney Thorne Smith.
Television's Courtney Thorne Smith.
Yeah, it was a lot for my son when he was little, but he got used
right.
to it.
Right, sure.
Yeah, it's important to know how to address people.
Yes. But a lot of his friends are probably like, wait, what's television?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
My son will actually say to me, I know you were big in the 90s.
But the 90s are back. I'm sure everything you used to wear on Melrose Place is like now being sold at Urban Outfitters.
Well, you know, so I went back and looked at the clip we're talking about today because I hadn't seen it since I was on it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted something to talk about. And those pants are back in. Everything I was wearing is back
everything.
In.
Everything. Yeah. Don't you wish you'd kept it all?
I probably still have most of them.
I don't know if that set design's back in, but the clothing's all back in. And the clip you're referencing is it's been famous for a long time, the clip of you with Norm Macdonald on Late Night with Conan O'Brien from 1997.
Yeah, and it just resurfaced again because Norm sadly passed away, surprisingly to, I think, most people.
Right.
And people were sharing that clip because it was a perfect storm of Norm really firing on all cylinders and completely undermining your attempt to promote a movie that you were in.
It became a highlight clip on Conan because that was 97. Like, he did a fifth anniversary special. And that clip was like kind of the big ender to the guest package of great memorable moments. And then the 10th anniversary. So it definitely lived up. It was definitely a big part of Late Night with Conan O'Brien prior to the internet really starting up.
But so how did that feel? I mean, you said you just watched it again this morning. How did it feel watching it?
It was so much fun to watch it. I remembered it as being great fun. And I remembered, you know, normally after talk show appearances, kind of like, was it okay? I don't know. It was fine. You know what I mean? But I remember just having so much fun because I'd just been out there laughing.
Right.
And then people would say, was that okay for you? Was that okay? And I thought, to me, watching it, I thought I just looked like someone who was having a wonderful time. He was making me laugh
so hard.
Conan was perfect, lovely.
Yeah.
Well, I authentically was having a great time. I mean, so I thought, so interesting that people say, and Conan, of course, was like, are you okay? Are you okay? I was like, did you not see me? I was laughing so hard. I was crying. I couldn't even breathe. I just thought, and I watched it afterwards. And also, I've seen him over the years. I'll run into him and he'll check on me. Maybe a show had just been on. But I watched it and I thought, you know, I was there with Andy and Norm and Conan. And I thought, what a heavenly place to sit. Like, if someone said you get to have dinner with those three guys, you'd say, are you kidding? And you would expect to just sit there and laugh. You wouldn't expect to have deep conversations. You wouldn't expect to get a word in edgewise, but it would be delightful to just sit and laugh. And that's how it felt for me.
And that's exactly what happened.
Well, I
think that's what people are responding to, is you weren't able to get a word in. It was just...
No, he...
Norm was a steamroller, and he was... Yeah.
The second there was a pause, I think after a while, both... It seemed like you and Conan were kind of like, he's coming back in 3.2 seconds, and go! And he just kept interrupting. Had you met him prior to that taping that night?
I don't think so.
Right. I almost think, in a way, it was like, I almost felt like he was trying to flirt with you on camera by, is that a crazy thought? Just that he was, I think he was trying to impress you.
Yeah, like
you.
It was his mating ritual.
Well, I hadn't remembered until I watched it again. They said in the beginning they had a crush on me from the Tom Snyder show, which is also hilarious. So it started off on this lovely note. I mean, you can't, it's not going to get much better than that.
He suckered you in with that. And then it was like,
you know, I don't mind being teased. That's how my family communicates.
Right.
You know, that's how my a group of girlfriends I've been friends with for 30 years. To me, like a generous, loving tease. Now, if he was saying something mean about me, it would have felt differently, but he wasn't.
No, not at all.
It was just funny and light.
Well, you were a guest on Late Night 6 times. So this was somewhere in the middle there, which made me happy too, because I was like, okay, at least you had had some other normal appearances on the show as well.
Where you got to talk.
Where you were allowed to talk.
Actually talk.
Yes.
To be interviewed.
It wouldn't have bothered me though, because... Like I said, you know talk shows. It's this very strange thing where you have to talk to a pre-interviewer and you have these set stories and the host sets you up. And Conan's so good at this because even though it's set up, you still feel like you're having a conversation. Like there's room to play. He's not going in this story. So you end up going through 10 stories in one talk show appearance. You have nothing left for the next 10 years. You can't talk to anybody for 10 more years. He lets it go and he'll actually have a conversation. So he's great at that. So I went in pretty relaxed. And I think... You know, even I was wearing my actual clothes. Like, I think that's what I wore that day. It was before you had to get a stylist. Now, this was pre-stylist. You could actually wear. And I liked it because I wore something that I would actually wear that represented me, right? As opposed to the character I was playing.
Yeah.
So when Norm started going, it just felt like a relief to me. It was like, oh, great. Especially when we were talking about chairman of the board, because, you know, that was not, say, a project of great pride for me. And I had to promote it. And I think I was there to promote it. But Conan started with Melrose Place because he probably thought that was more interesting and then went into chairman of the board. And I was so happy when Norm took it and ran with it because I didn't know what to say. Like, it's one of those things, it read as funny. I had high hopes for it. I did it.
Right.
The experience wasn't great. And I thought, oh, this is not going to be what I'd hope. Like, you thought, you never know. This could be amazing.
I'm sure that happens a lot. Where it's just, there's so many levels at which things can go wrong. And, you know, even in the editing.
Yes. And look, granted, you know, you're doing Carrot Top's first movie, you might say, you might have had an idea. But, you know, you also don't know, like, Courtney Cox did The Pet Detective. And, you know, that was with a relatively unknown Jim Carrey. And that turned out amazingly. So I thought, you never know. But I should have thought, that probably doesn't happen twice in a row. You probably
in the same year.
But I really wanted to do comedy after Melrose Place because Allison was so just eternally brutalized and pained. Yeah. And what didn't happen to Allison, right?
Yeah, very soapy. Yeah.
Oh, my word.
It's like Jesse's saying, it is so hard to make a good movie because there's so many things that can go wrong.
And so many cooks.
So many ways for something not to end up being fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, even brilliant people can make bad movies.
Yes.
You know, you go to a movie with your favorite comic actor and you don't laugh. You think, how could that possibly happen?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. Probably also detached from it because it's probably something you finished filming like a year earlier. So you probably were like, oh my God, I did that movie. I've got to talk about it now. I forgot I did it.
Yes, I think I kind of hoped it would kind of fade away. And then they said, you have this in your contract. You have to go promote it. So I went on Conan, who's a very safe place for me. And like I said, he's my he was my favorite host. I felt the most comfortable there.
And it was 1 a.m, so there was no pressure.
It was 1 a.m. Well, the whole show felt, you know him, he's so lovely as a person and he's so irreverent. And I thought, well, I can just go in here and have a nice time at least. And then I'll be done. I'll do my duty. And then Norm started and it was just a gift. It was just great. You do it. You do it. Rock on. And I got to just sit there and laugh. I was beside myself. I was so happy.
That's great.
And he did really get word out on the movie.
I know. I was going to say it was probably the best promotion that the movie got.
Well, it wasn't really. It wasn't great promotion, but you know, the movie wasn't going to sink or swim based on promotion or not. It was just, it was going to sink is the truth of what was going to happen. And, but I got to have a really fun talk show appearance. And it happened once before. I did the Tonight Show and I was talking about my sister's wedding and I did a bit about my dad telling a joke as we were walking down the aisle and Don Rickles was there. And Don Rickles started riffing on my dad being insane and why was he at the wedding? Wow. Shouldn't he have been in a home? And he just went off on my dad. And people said, was your dad upset? I was like, was my dad upset? It was highlight of his life. He never stopped talking about it. Don Rickles teased him. He was beside himself. So we both got to be teased by comedians we really admire.
That's great.
Oh, that's
did your dad start bringing that story up every time you were out with people? Like, hey, you guys like Don Rickles?
You know, Don Rickles.
Oh, here we go again. Yeah. That is quite an honor.
My dad was very funny in his own right. So I'm sure he was busy telling jokes. Maybe he worked that in every once in a while.
Yeah.
Don Rickles was on Late Night early on, and it was a similar thing where all the writers, everyone piled into his dressing room. Everyone just wanted to meet him. And he just started insulting all the writers. Like, you know, he just knew what everyone wanted. So it's like, oh, you're the brains behind this show. You know, just started. And everyone was just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. He's making fun of me. It was a dream come true for everyone.
Yes, it is. That's exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
So were you already a fan of Norm's or were you aware of Norm at all?
I was a fan. I'm a comedy nerd. I always have been. So I was a big fan going in. So it was fun to just be there and sit next to him and thrilled to have him take over my interview.
Get the Norm treatment.
Yeah.
That was the tail end of him hosting Weekend Update because I think he left the show later, SNL later that year. So it timed out nicely. And he was riding that wave of, you know, being the Weekend Update host, which was
where he was brilliant, obviously.
Great. So a lot of times I think he'd be like a last minute booking sometimes because he'd be in the building. And it's just like that Conan was mentioning this, that, you know, if someone dropped out or something, oh, you can get Norm down, which is like a, you know, usually a step up sometimes, you know, wow, you have Norm coming in. And a lot of times Conan had no idea what he was going to say or do, which made it all exciting.
Yeah, and he could trust him, right? He knew it was going to be funny. Right. He knew it was going to be interesting. I watched, because I went down that rabbit hole after I watched the clip, and I watched him tell the moth joke.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting. It reminded me, my dad told jokes that way. He was just so inherently funny that a two-minute joke takes 10 minutes. The punchline is the least of it.
Uh-huh.
You're going on the journey. And that's the same thing with Norm. It's like, I don't care how long this takes.
No.
Because it's just fun watching him tell a story.
But I hadn't seen the moth joke since it aired, and I had no memory of it. And he's so delightful doing it. You just
And you almost forget that it was a joke even to begin with. It's like, oh, I don't even remember what the premise was anymore.
He's such like a disruptor. Like the Night of the Moth joke show, I remember I was walking all, like act one, we do all the comedy stuff. And then I have to go off stage and we'd go edit, you know, pull it up or tighten it or whatever. I go back to the edit room and I left the studio. And I'm walking in a hallway and Norm's being brought the other direction to be the guest. And I know him only to say hello, like in a very superficial showbiz way, not at all. And I had my arm in a sling because I broke my arm. And he's like, hey, and it was like an excuse for him to just stop and start talking to me. And he just started going, yeah, you know, my uncle broke his arm and oh boy, let me. And he started going into this long story and I'm like, why is he doing this? And then I realized like the stage manager and the segment producer, all these people were around him and they were trying to hustle him out to, you know, the commercial break was ending. And I swear, I was thinking like, he's just doing this to bust their balls. Cause he just went on a monologue for like 2 minutes. And they're kind of like looking at their watches and freaking out. And I was like, I think he just loves always disrupting.
Pushing people's buttons. Yeah.
Well, also, don't you think, I feel like he works on a different time frame than the rest of us.
Yes.
Right? Like that's one of the great things. His timing is so funny. And when you said, you know, in the interview with me and Conan and him, he was like, there'd be a pause and then there'd be like, he would come in at just the end of the pause. Like his timing was so extraordinary that you never knew when you were talking to him when the break was going to be, when the punchline was going to be, and you don't care. You just kind of, and he did, you know, I saw him on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Yeah.
Right.
I felt the same way. I thought, oh, he's just having a lovely time. He's just in the moment, in his own world, his own time, having a wonderful time. He doesn't seem nervous. He doesn't seem like he has to perform.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. He'd take over and change the timing of whatever was going on and kind of turn it in, you're right, to Norm time.
Norm time.
Yes.
And you were literally kind of had to just be in his thrall and go along for the ride. And he would always just, you know, stick the landing. It was always great.
Because he was so interesting. Like it wasn't, I didn't feel like I was fighting for stage time. It was like he was talking and everything stopped and we all just stopped and looked at him until he was done because was the most interesting thing in the room.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, luckily I didn't think, he's taking my time, I need to compete. Didn't even occur to me. I just thought, oh my God, Norm Macdonald is talking.
Right.
This is amazing.
And I don't remember any other example on Late Night where he would just kind of take over like that for during someone else's interview. It was just...
Yeah, I wonder if he felt bad after that one.
I don't think so. I think it began, but it, like as I was saying, when they saw the shot, and it had all of us in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. Andy, Norm, me, and Conan. Yep. So it was like we were all there together, hanging. Almost like we were a panel, and we were all there together.
Well, and I love, you can really see that Conan doesn't know what's coming. I mean, and I know Conan loves that too, when things get derailed and he's like, all right, we're throwing the note cards out and now we're just following this new thread. But yeah, you can really see it, the joy that he's like, what's about to come out and how am I going to react to that?
Well, and I think the reason that Chairman of the Board final joke is so memorable is because Conan tees it up like, you know, he goes, what's the name of the movie? And you're like, Chairman of the Board. And then he just turns to him and goes, do something with that, you freak. Like that is putting all this pressure on Norm and setting up whatever comes next. And then he just comes up with that line. I bet it's spelled B-O-R-E-D.
Yeah.
And that, wow, is just like, wow, okay.
Yeah, and I remember that as coming the beginning. I remembered that as being his run. So when I went back and watched, I was surprised that was the end. There was so much other stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
It was just like you're having dinner with somebody and then somebody at the next table keeps talking to you guys. That's how it felt like it kept. Yeah, there's a restaurant near my house. Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
It's like, okay. I mean, I guess you're a part of it.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I felt like a lottery winner just to get to be there. Because often, and it's true too on talk shows, sometimes you're sitting with people you really admire.
Right.
But there's this window of you and the host and you're talking and these people right. don't really participate. So I loved it. I mean, I think it would be a great way. I think do that more. It was so much fun to all be in it together.
Just talking about it, there's so many weird elements to a late night talk show. Like you're speaking to a host, but there's someone else sitting next to you who maybe you admire. And then it's like, do I talk to them or do I just talk to? And then you have an audience, like someone's added an audience right. to this weird formula.
Yeah.
Then you got to worry about, oh, are they laughing or are they listening? And I mean, I guess probably the best thing to do is try to tune out the audience. Like what do you do in that situation? Are you even aware of the audience or just try to keep it between you and the host or? What's going through your mind?
I have no idea. I mean, I think aware of the audience because they're the third person if there's two right. of you. Now, there were four of us, so they were the fifth person.
Right,
just
right.
Nice.
Yeah.
And they were having fun, and I was having fun. I think right. you know, we were all just having a great time.
Yeah.
And I think that's rare. You can have a nice time where you can think, oh, I did a good job. But there's a very mm-hmm. different thing between walking off a talk show and thinking, I hit all my beats, they're a good job. And
right.
I genuinely have fun. I'm sweating from laughing so hard. I can't. Right. Like, I just had that great, you know, that feeling after you've gone out with your friends and you're laughing so hard, you're kind of drained.
Yes.
That's how I felt.
Dehydrated.
Walking yeah. off stage. And then Conan goes, are you okay? And I was like, are you kidding? Like, I'm beside myself. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Well, that's
you
funny.
Should have added a writer for any talk shows you did after that Norm had
Norm
to be
had to come. Yeah.
out there if you were promoing something you didn't love.
Well, I was wondering that because you came on, you came on many times after this appearance too. Were you then like, oh, I hope something goes off the rails or is this just going to be a straight interview and I'm going to have to, you know, hit all my story beats?
Well, like I said, it was always fun to be interviewed by Conan.
Yeah.
It was always fun. I always felt relaxed because I knew that he would be funny and charming and it would be light and I wouldn't feel put on the spot, right? I always felt like he had it and we were going to have a nice time.
You felt like you were in capable hands. Yeah.
I felt like I was in capable hands. And, you know, in something like that, in that time in my life, I did so many interviews. And for the most part, they're fairly dry. You make a joke, you hit your beats. But
right.
this was so the exception. You would never think this is going to happen again. I mean, literally, it's like winning the lottery. And then the next day, I wake up going, I guess I won the lottery today. You're not going to win the lottery again.
right,
you
right.
just have to remember that. And then as I got older and it was comedy writers. Like when I worked on comedy shows, they'd come out and say, oh, we were watching that clip. Mm. the Norm Macdonald clip. And I thought, well, that's weird. That's when I started getting a sense that it was having a life of its own.
Oh, cool.
Like people would mention it to you.
And comedy writers, which I loved. I was so flattered by that. I thought, well, I love that I've done something that you guys think is interesting. Or I'm not gonna say, I said I was a part of something because obviously Norm is the star of the clip. So that was just great to have something like that and to go, well, so also when it's something you really enjoy, and then it has a second life, that feels extra good because then you get to relive a good memory again and again.
Yeah. And maybe there's, you get a residual check.
I wonder, you know, it's not shockingly, you don't get paid a lot for talk shows. So I think you get paid.
What, that's true.
Like $300. So there's probably
it's like $0.03 minimum. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
You mentioned something that we don't touch upon a lot, which I don't think a lot of people know about, which is, when you're going to be in a talk show, you have to do a whole pre-interview.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes it could be like a one-hour phone call or something where they're you and this segment producer trying to find things to talk, you know, like stories.
Mining you for punchlines.
Yeah, and they're good or bad. I mean, the good segment producers will say, hey, how are you? What's going on? What's going on with your dog? What's going on with your son? Right. You know, they'll ask you, it'll be a fun conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then the bad ones go, what do you got for me?
Yeah.
No. No, that's not funny. No. So by the time you get
good stories,
a broken shell, and you crawl out to the talk show going, I've got nothing of interest because I've just beaten to a pulp.
Oh, no.
So there's a huge difference. It's so, well, also, it's just not smart because you want to walk out confident and feel like what you have to bring is going to be funny, especially that was a time in my life when I was doing a lot of talk shows. So,
right.
Yeah. And you had to have different stories for each one.
You have to have different stories. Yeah. So you're constantly mining your life to say, this is funny. Is it talk show worthy?
Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
Can people relate to this?
Is this anything? Right.
Yeah.
Were those examples of people going, no, 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 like right before you'd go, like you were back in your dressing room?
No, you do the pre-interview usually a day or two before that you're on the phone. And the good ones, like I said, make you feel, they go, oh my God, that's, make you feel charming and interesting. And it gets you telling more stories.
Right.
The bad ones or the harsh ones just like say, no, not good, no, not good, no, not good. And so then you walk out feeling just completely brutalized and uninteresting.
I'm really boring. Yeah.
And probably that person, that person from the phone is probably standing out in the studio with their arms folded. You're just like, oh my God.
Well, but also
I have to please
want
this parent.
But they want their segment to go well. So it was always so baffling to me. And I thought, maybe you've never seen, like, you go watch someone else do one of these because you're going to have a much happier, more confident talk show guest if they feel like they were funny in the pre-interview.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you're like their corner man, you know, and it's like you want to just build them up and have it all be positive.
Yeah, it's just bad parenting to say you're not interesting, you'll fail.
Right.
It's just, you know, read any parenting book.
I hope none of them have children.
No.
Why are their children so insecure?
No.
No, not interesting. No, not interesting.
You know what? We're going to skip dinner tonight. Just go to your room.
Yeah.
You've
you
got
have nothing,
nothing
for me today. You have nothing. Eat in your room. Talk to your wall. Exactly. That's all you deserve.
We'll try this again tomorrow, and hopefully you'll step up.
Yeah. No, that's great to hear the sort of backstory of what happens before an interview, because I think a lot of people also assume that that's just, you know, that you're just talking to the host.
It's all ad-libbed.
That it's all off the cuff, that you're improvising everything. But there is planning that goes into it.
Some planning.
Yeah. I mean, it is improvised, but you kind of know.
Lot of planning. Right. Like, the daytime talk shows are much more casual.
Yeah.
The nighttime talk shows are more stressful. Like, I think if you have a host like Conan, you can be a little more loose. Because he's going to make something out of whatever you give him, right?
Right.
He's going to create something funny out of it. The Tonight Show was very intense. Like, you had your stories and it would go through them, boom, 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 boom. And that's very nerve wracking because as you're going through them, you think, am I out of stories? Am I like, well, I came with five. I thought that would be for, I have, you know, four talk shows worth. Now we've gone through all my stories in my 2 minute segment. I've got nothing again.
Right.
I've got nothing.
Yeah.
Where's Don Rickles? Don, interrupt.
Exactly.
Wait, Courtney, I think we can hear your bulldog snoring.
Oh,
is that
can you hear
happening?
Her snoring? Oh, I can't. She's a pug. She's a new addition.
Does she need a sleep apnea? Oh, a pug. That's right. Yeah.
I just adopted Georgie from a wonderful organization called the Pug Queen. They adopt pugs from all over the world. She came from China.
Oh.
And she's clearly exhausted from the trip.
Wow.
And it's amazing that she works as hard as she does, and it's just pugs. But that's how many dogs need to be rescued in the world that she focuses on one.
Wow.
Like a snoring husband, if I put on her, the opposite, if I put on her stomach, she doesn't snore. So she must have leaned a little bit.
When she's had too much to drink.
Yeah, exactly.
Do they make breathe rights for pugs?
Or sleep apnea machine.
Or get a sleep apnea machine, right.
So cute. Are you a pug person? Is that your signature dog?
I'm a dog person. I'm obsessed with dogs. My last dog I rescued before her, I looked up pug, and a lot of the pugs that are available for rescue are really, really old. They're missing eyes and like in really, really bad shape. So I found this dog that came up under pug. He's not a pug. He's like some sort of Chihuahua mix, but I adopted mine crazy about him. And then somebody told me about the pug queen.
Yeah.
And I found out I could adopt a younger pug with a lot of years left in her. So I did that. So I'm excited.
That's great.
Yeah. We think she's 4 or 5.
Oh, wow.
But she's hilarious.
Yeah, no, pugs are endlessly entertaining. My only complaint about pugs, oftentimes the tail doesn't cover their anus, which I have an issue with. But that's just me.
That's true. And it's dark black against their light fur.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Thank you.
Yes. If you're looking for an invisible anus, pug is not your dog.
No,
that is not your
Not for you.
Right.
Labs are nice. They usually their tails kind of go down over it. But if that's your goal. Yeah.
If you can train the tail to droop over, then I'm totally on board.
Or you could make a little pair of underwear for it.
Oh, that's
nice.
Little briefs,
yeah, or a drape or something appropriate. An anal drape.
A skirt, because she's such a pretty lady.
That's all I'm asking.
Well, one of the things I noticed upon rewatching your clip with Norm was that you get to talk a little bit about the season finale of Melrose Place and your character Allison, who was really kind of like run through the ringer, it seemed like. And I was wondering if there was anything you didn't get to say that, you know, because you got steamrolled, but it really was just kind of getting to the point of you said it's too much on the show.
Well, I used to have, way back when, I had a run of what she'd been through. My mom used to call her Stella Dallas, who I guess is a soap opera star from the 50s, maybe even a radio soap opera star to whom everything happened. And I had a speech once. It was a Christmas episode, and I was talking to Grant Show, Jake, and I was crying and listing what had happened to myself that year. And it was insane because I'd been on drugs and I was drunk and I hit a kid when I was drunk. And then my best friend was in a custody battle and I showed up high at the custody battle and she lost her kid. And then I remembered I was molested and I confronted my molester at my family barbecue, and then Billy was going
to
be
married. That's where you do it. It just invite him to the barbecue.
Oh, and then the apartment building blew up, and they tried to get me out, but I was too drunk, so I didn't want to get out. And so then,
wow,
they got me out, but the explosion had made me blind. And then everyone was really nice to me. So that when I got my sight back, I pretended I was still blind to make everybody still be nice to me. And then everybody found out I was pretending to be blind, but I wasn't really blind.
This is all one episode.
Yes,
and then we did a reunion to the 25th anniversary. So 6 of us went back to New York and did one of the morning talk shows. And they did this game where they were playing scenes and we were trying to remember what the scenes were. There was a scene where Doug Savant, who played Matt and I, had been kidnapped. Like all this, we were kidnapped. Like
you didn't even remember that. Yeah.
It's all a blur.
We couldn't remember any of it because we did 33 episodes a year, which is an obscene amount.
What? 33? Yeah.
33 episodes a year. We did for twice a year for 6 weeks. We shot 2 episodes at once and the actors would run back and forth. They'd never done that before. We had no idea what was happening. We were just like, say the lines as written. The audience will fill in the emotions. We have no idea what's happening.
Wow.
And they just kept raising the stakes. You know, it had to get higher and higher.
So right, of course. Oh my God.
You're just trying to play.
It's like being addicted to heroin. You got to keep. We need to get that high.
They need the dose.
I know. Well, and my character was an alcoholic and a drug addict. So I was also balancing that with everything. That
was my gosh.
Oh, I can see why you'd want to do comedy after that.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like it almost veered into comedy in a way.
Well, it was comedy and we had a lot of fun. Like, we did have a lot of fun because we understood the absurdity of it, but you can't play it.
Right. You have to play it
for the humor, or
you,
it's an insult to the audience, right? So you're playing
of course.
It, even though you know that, you know, confronting your molester at the family picnic is wrong in every way and not realistic. And, you know, you have, because you want to be respectful to people who've had that experience, right?
Right.
So you, you can't,
of course.
You can't riff on, oh, what a ridiculous way to do this, because you try to play the truth. What's happening?
Right, right. Well, it's such a compliment to you as an actress, as an actor, that they had your character go through all these crazy experiences.
Yeah, they're like, she can pull this off.
It's a testament to your range that you can do all that. It's pretty impressive.
Well, that's kind of say, you know, it's up to debate how well.
I'll debate you.
We did it, but we all had to go. We all had to go through.
Right.
Absolutely insane situations. I mean, we were all just trying to keep up.
Someone had to be the molester.
Exactly.
Do you feel like that helped later when you're going out for roles? You're like, okay, this is, I got this. I've already been a burn victim. I could,
you name it, I can do it. I've run kids over drunk. I've run kids over sober. I run kids over high.
Well, you know, that's a good point. You do get to do a lot, right? Like on a sitcom, you're sort of doing, you're being funny, which is my favorite thing to do. So, you know, I love to do it. But on Melrose Place, you get to try every single emotional arc.
Yeah.
Probably in the same episode. You get to go through all of them. And also kiss every boy they bring onto the set. So that was kind of nice.
Oh.
It's a nice way to spend your 20s.
Who is the best kisser?
Oh, I can't tell you.
There
were many.
Oh.
Well, you know, Andrew Hsu, I actually dated him, so I can say that and not offend him.
Right.
Lovely guy, great kisser.
Oh.
All right. That's a safe answer.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering, Courtney, what are your favorite types of roles to play? Because you obviously had a wide range from drama to comedy,
sitcom,
rom coms, mysteries. Yeah.
I like comedy. Sitcom is my favorite. I just honestly, you know, I like to go to work with funny people. And on a sitcom, first of all, the schedule of sitcoms, you know, multi-camera sitcoms, is so light that everybody there is happy, you know, top to bottom, the entire crew. Everybody can also see their families. They're living balanced lives.
That's important.
I love it. And I like that because my life is very important to me. You know, I'm not someone who's ever said I'd rather be working. I enjoy working, but I love my dogs. I'm crazy about my kid. I love my friends.
You have other interests.
So I love
You said your dogs before your kid. I just want to point
when
that out.
When I have... He would not be surprised. He's a teenager now, so he's likely to have other interests. As long as I'm not asking him something, he's thrilled. Go talk to your
number
dog.
Four. Right. Just leave me alone.
He's very busy.
Yeah, he's happy to have distractions.
Happy to have mommy distracted.
Right.
You know, when he turned like 12, 13, and all of a sudden it wasn't come play Legos with me. It was
stay out of my room.
He wanted to be with his friends. And that's when I went back to college because I realized, I don't want him to start saying to his friends, we have to play with my mom. She has nothing else to do.
Right.
So that's really, because I loved playing Chutes and Ladders. I loved playing Legos.
Sure.
I loved all the stuff. And then I realized, I'm not the person he wants to hang out with anymore.
Right.
So I had to get really busy. So I adopted two dogs and I went back to school. And
oh, that's great.
He's very happy because he's very busy with his own life.
What did you study when you went back to school?
I'm in school now.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I'm getting my undergrad because I started working when I was 17
right
out of high school. So I never did. So I'm going to University of Pennsylvania has an online school called Penn LPS Online. So my degree is called Creative Studies, which is really writing, English. And then I had to take a math class. I had to take a professional
writing class. They
always
throw that in there.
Right.
But I got an A+ in my math class.
Congratulations.
Oh my gosh.
Of course, it was called Math is All Around Us. It's like math for creative people. And my son said, well, it wasn't math. And I was like, well, say what you will.
Just go hang out with your friends and leave mother alone.
It was math enough.
And you're going to be an Ivy League graduate.
Oh my God,
I'm
going to
be an Ivy League graduate.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So cool. I'm always really inspired by people who it's intimidating when you're going to be older than, you know, your classmates, but that's, it's cool for people to see that you can have a second act. Like, you can always have, you know, another aspect of your life, and there's no limit to when that can happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, and because of how this is designed, there are a lot of people my age.
Oh,
and
great.
There's a right. lot of the staff can take them free. So I have a lot of professors in my classes, which is so yeah. much fun. And because of the pandemic, people started using Zoom. So it used right. to be all online, but now we really have classes where we get to talk to each other and see each other. And, you know, because of where I am in my life and my kid is older, I've got so much time. So I'm the dork who's getting my assignments in at 6 a.m. a day early.
Right.
And other people are like, well, I've got to go to work. And I've got, I'm like, oh, really? After I do this, I'm going to walk the dogs. And then maybe I'll do more. And I'm doing my life. It's what I'm doing. So I'm having so much fun with it. It's nice to not have to, you know, they keep saying, well, what do you want to do? What are you going to use your degree for?
Right.
I'm like, to have? Like, I'm just here yeah. for the thrill of it.
Well, you like learning, it sounds like. I mean, that's
yeah.
I get to
nice.
Be here to enjoy the learning. It's, you know, it's young because we'll have young people in the classes. I was taking a screenwriting class. It was so much fun. And the guy was so great. We were learning so much. And this one young guy, what about grading? And I thought, I feel so lucky that I don't, that's not where my
that
brain is.
Matter.
I get
yeah.
to
right.
just go, oh, that's amazing. That's thrilling. That's exciting. I can't wait to learn.
I mean, you did get an A+ anyway, but.
Right.
So I don't have to do anything else. I can die today, and that will be taped to my coffin.
Right.
A+ in math.
Yes.
No, but I think that's a really, because when you are 20, you're not doing, I mean, you're so forward thinking that you're.
Well, yes, yeah. and I was so drunk, so I wouldn't have remembered anything. Like, it you know what I mean? I wouldn't have remembered anything. So this is a great time for me to do it.
Yeah.
Right. So when you went into acting when you were 17, part of your brain, I'm thinking, was like, someday I want to, maybe someday down the road, circle back and go to college.
Well, I was packing to go to Allegheny College.
Okay.
And I got a call from my agent asking me to audition for something. So I got cast in Lucas in this freak open call audition in San Francisco.
Lucas was a movie.
Lucas yeah. was a movie. David Seltzer, wow. to whom I owe literally my entire career, wrote and directed Lucas.
Yeah.
And so then I got an agent out of that. My high right. school acting teacher's wife happened. It was all felt so.
Wow. So you did a movie before wow. you even had an agent. That's so cool.
Well, so no, I got an agent oh. through that because my high school acting teacher's yeah. wife was a working actor.
Wow. Yeah.
So I got her agent, who's my agent to this day.
Oh, wow.
That's great.
And they called and said, do you want to have done an audition for a movie for Kick? So I did, and I got it. So I thought, I'll put off college for a year and a year and a year. And then I signed up to go again when I was 21.
Yeah.
But I'd already said yes to do the very intellectual beach volleyball movie, Side Out. So I traded college for Side Out, which, you know, same thing, right? Same thing.
The prequel to Chairman of the Board.
Yeah, exactly. So now, worked for a long time, had a kid. My kid started closing his playroom door, and I went online and I looked, and all of a sudden, so many great schools have online options. You know,
That's
you could
great.
Go right now and take a class at Harvard, take a class at Yale.
Right.
Yeah.
It's really extraordinary.
That's so cool.
That is great. No, my wife went in when she turned 50, went back. We moved to LA and she was like, the kids were older, and she went to online partial residency school to get an MFA.
Oh, great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a great experience. So
great.
Well, Courtney, I have one more question for you, which is
okay.
And then I have 20.
Okay. And then I have one more after that. Have you watched Chairman of the Board since it came out?
I don't know that I watched it when it came out.
Oh.
Well, it could become a cult classic. Maybe some yeah. cult movies need a little more time, another 10 years. We'll circle back to it.
I know. Yeah. I mean, all of this is making me want to watch it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, please do. And if you make it through, you win a prize.
It feels like a challenge. Mm-hmm.
I dare you. I double dare you to go
okay.
watch it.
Okay.
All right.
Jesse and I will watch it.
Challenge accepted.
We yeah. should watch it before this episode airs.
We will do that, and then we can
you
comment
should.
On it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll rate it. We'll give it a rating.
But do you want to hear the rating, Courtney?
Be kind. Let me have some points for being a good person. I want the good person rating. I don't want the objective rating.
We'll be very kind.
I want the good person with the adorable dog rating.
Okay.
I'm sure you're great in it. So I'm not worried about you.
Yeah, we're not worried about you.
I was 20. When was I when I left Mauer? I was like 27. And I was the president of a multinational corporation. So let's just sit with that
in
for
the
a
movie.
Minute.
I have no problem with that.
Because when you think of 20-year-old Courtney Thorne-Smith, you think president of a multinational corporation.
Yeah, I remember Julia Roberts in My Best Friend's Wedding is 27, and she's got this pact. Like, if we're not married by the time we're 27, we're just going to marry this random guy I went to college with. You know, 27 was like when movies thought we were supposed to be adults, fully formed adults.
I know. It seems so young now. It's like 27.
Yeah. What?
Aren't you still in high school?
You're still on your parents' insurance. Yeah.
That's right. You just got off of it. So everything is fraught. Yeah, we didn't get a chance to talk about this, but you also starred in a series of mystery movies called The Emma Fielding Mysteries. Curious what that was like. That seems like it would be a whole different experience where you played a detective.
That was really fun. I got to work with James Tupper, who I really enjoy. And it was they're really fun little romps. You know, I wasn't really a detective. I was an archaeologist.
Oh, right. What a dream.
Who was also a detective.
Oh, my God. That was my childhood dream.
Was it really?
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
So you're kind of Indiana Jonesy-ish.
Yeah.
We had some things that were sort of Indiana Jonesy. It was fun. It was a fun little lark to do. You know, they do a lot of those, and they've got it down.
Right.
And it's nice. And you shoot in Canada where everybody is so nice, but you're cold the whole time, so it's the balance.
No, you said they have it locked down up there, and that reminds me of, I know someone who worked on a show called Cosby Murder Mysteries.
Yes.
There was this guy named Bill Cosby, and he played a detective on the show.
Okay.
And he said that, you know, they'd spent all this time writing an intricate murder mystery script where you have to stick to the script. You know, you're going from point A to, I don't know, F, where the killer's caught. And they said that, like, they'd be out on the set and a helicopter would land and Bill Cosby would come out and to shoot some scenes. He'd shoot the scenes and ad-lib all this stuff. And they'd be like, that was great. But, you know, you got to find the knife in the weeds or we're not going to find out who the killer is. And he'd just be like, you've got it. No. You know what? I trust you guys.
You'll figure something else out.
Yes. And he'd get back in the helicopter and take off. And they were like, what the fuck? And they'd have to they'd have to rewrite the whole script where someone else was like, hey, but what's that over there in the weed? Oh, it's a knife.
Wow.
I had never thought about that, you know, with a mystery. I guess it does have to be a tightly constructed.
Well, those old ones, because that was when they were doing Columbo.
Right.
You know how intricately plotted those were? Those are brilliant movies. Like still watching it. Those were so well done.
Yeah.
Like features. They were like features and they did, I think, 4 Year at Macmillan and Wife.
Right.
I'm going to go rewatch those.
Oh, yes. Fun.
They were so well done. That TV movies were so well done then.
Yeah.
In the 70s, there were a ton of them. And except for Killdozer. Killdozer, I remember as a kid.
What was Killdozer?
It was a bulldozer on an island.
That would kill people?
Well, it hit a glowing rock that had come from outer space. And then the bulldozer came to life and started killing everyone in this construction crew on an island.
Oh my
and
God.
It was, I was like 10 years old and I'm like, I think everyone could maybe outrun the bulldozer that's going at 3 miles an hour. No, it would like come out from behind bushes. Like someone would be, you know, eating and it's like,
It's very quiet.
Yes. I don't know how they finally defeated bulldozer.
You remember that.
Maybe they walked faster than 2 miles an hour to escape
Killdozer. Do you think that was brought out to compete with Knight Rider, which was my favorite show?
I don't know. Or did it inspire Knight Rider?
Mm.
Huh.
I don't know. We have a lot of homework to do.
Did the bulldozer
have
a British accent? That's the real question.
I don't think it... That would have been great if it talked.
Oh, my God. Sounds like it's time for a reboot.
It's so time for a
Courtney
reboot.
Thorne
it's
Smith.
So time for a reboot.
So Jesse and I have a lot of homework. We have to watch Chairman of the Board,
Killdozer,
Columbo. Do the second one. And I'm going to be the hard-boiled head of the construction site, because I think that's the next step after running a multinational corporation and chairman of the board.
Of course. Yeah. You want to build
I'll use like a toothpick or something to add that illusion to make me look tough. So I'm a prop actor. It's just part of who I am. I can't wear a hard hat because of the hair.
Oh, right.
Oh, right, of course.
I'll constantly be taking it off, like on Charlie's Angels, when they were taking off the helmets all the time.
Yeah.
Whoa, you're really in charge?
We've got to find that bulldozer.
Yeah, now that you're taking classes, do you feel like you want to write something for yourself? Or has that ever been something you've aspired to?
I did. I wrote and published a novel that came and went very quickly several years ago. So now I'm writing again. Now that my son has grown, I'm writing again. I'm taking mostly writing classes. I'm being not very smart, and I'm taking all the writing classes first. So I'm going to be left with math and
your next
geology
book is a novel about a mathematician.
With math and science. Exactly. It's not very smart, but I'm having a lovely time taking all the writing classes.
That sounds
great.
Like a great plan to me.
Yeah.
It sounds great.
Yeah, it is. It's great fun.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to whatever comes next for you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you always have a space to promote it here on Inside Conan. That should be just a standing. We pay reparations to Courtney Thorne Smith for self-promotion.
Oh, I shouldn't have told her I had fun. I should have said it was awful. You own it. Damn it.
You should have said that. Yeah.
You'll learn eventually.
All wrong.
You will learn eventually.
Well, Courtney, it's so great to meet you. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you. This was fun. So good to talk to you both.
Yeah, you too.
We were very excited when...
when you said yes.
You said you'd be on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, very excited. So much fun.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Courtney Thorne Smith.
Thank you, Courtney.
We did promise in that interview that we were going to watch Chairman of the Board.
I immediately forgot we promised that. And then our producer was like, so you guys are going to watch a movie, right? And we're like, wait, what? Like, you promised.
Yeah. And then you watched it first. And I thought, well, we don't both need to watch it.
Right.
There's no sense in both of us being miserable.
So did you watch it?
I did end up watching it.
Oh, you felt guilty.
In solidarity, yeah.
And I didn't say a thing to you one way or the other, whether it was...
You didn't.
A fantastic sleeper, should have been a sleeper hit.
Right, a cult classic.
Well?
Well, I did look up the Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is?
I think it was like 13%.
It was 13%, yes.
Yeah, and with our two
downvotes...
Which
I think you get 7% just for putting your name on
that's
it.
That's true. Where do we start? That movie, within the first 30 seconds, lets you know what you're in for.
Yes.
Which is very unusual for a film to come out of the gate that struggling.
As hot.
It
yes.
comes out hot in one direction. Boy, oh boy.
What I was curious about was whether they came up with the title before the movie was written, because there's just a very loose. So there's kind of a surfing theme in the movie.
Right.
Carrot Top is a surfer dude.
Right.
And he lives in Venice. And then I'll just give a quick plot synopsis.
Oh, okay.
He somehow, he befriends this old man who is the head of a multi-million dollar corporation.
Jack Warden, the great character actor.
Yes.
That stunned me that he's in there.
Only for one scene.
Right.
And then he dies.
He knew what to do.
And he leaves everything to Carrot Top.
Right.
Who becomes chairman of the board.
Right. See, the title works on two levels.
It works on two levels. The thing I did like is that Jack Warden does a video will.
Yes.
Where he bequeaths things. And I thought that was both a great device and also something that I would like to explore myself.
Sure.
Just one last.
Absolutely.
F you to my enemies.
And it forces people to come to your funeral to watch a video well.
That's true.
Good way to get
a full house.
Yeah, attendance.
Oh, and then you don't have to be there to hear if stuff's not getting laughs.
Right.
That's the best part.
You know what amazed me about that movie? Carrot Top was screaming the entire movie. Like, no one told him, you're not in a club. He was like talking like this Would you like to go out on a date? I was just, it was the most, it was crazy. It was crazy.
Well, and I was also curious, he has all these homemade inventions. Do you right. think that he made those himself? Are they technically props?
They are props. I mean, he was a hot prop comic at the time. Right. So they were like, let's cash in on his prowess for props.
Yes.
And the fact he screams on stage, which uh-huh. I understand on stage, but he was yelling through the whole movie.
Yeah, it really was off tonally with how everyone else was. I mean, Courtney right. is kind of a serious actress in it.
Right.
She's a very buttoned up executive at the company.
Right.
Who also, I was like, she didn't even appear till I think 45 minutes into the film.
No, I think they were writing it and they're like, oh, you know, we need to add a love interest.
Yes.
And is the movie over yet? No. Okay. Here's
how much
Courtney.
More? Yeah.
Yeah. Thorne Smith. And then she quickly, you know, falls for the top just because of all of his, you know, I'm sure he has many props for the bedroom. And that was that.
You have to hope.
I will say the one thing that saved it for me is Larry Miller, isn't it? Who is it?
Yes.
One of my favorite comedians.
That was the best part of the movie by a lot.
He's a great comic
he's funny.
Actor. Very funny. He and oh man, I don't know if you ever saw him do stand up comedy. Late 80s, early 90s, one of the top comics. Really, really hilarious. So he's really funny.
He's really great. Yeah. I mean, I don't.
As Carrot Top's nemesis. Also,
yes,
you're
he's
rooting
a really
for
good
him
villain.
Against Carrot Top.
Right. So,
yeah. I mean, Carrot Top's a really nice guy and everything, but they just should have toned down his screaming in the film.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know. I mean, it just seems all of it's odd. I don't know how it was, if it was written for Carrot Top or if he.
I think so. It must
okay.
have been. But it's an insane movie. If you, yes.
Yeah.
It's crazy on all levels. Like my eyes and my ears and my brain have lawyered up. Three separate sets of attorneys to sue.
Yeah, the ear damage.
I was happy to have the commercial breaks. That kind of
helped
me. Oh, that's
I was going
to
say that the commercials actually saved the movie.
Yes.
I think that more movies like this should have commercial breaks.
Yes.
To be honest.
It did help. It's like
it helped.
Yeah. I could get up. I could collect my thoughts. And then you dive back in.
Yeah.
It was like doing, you know, interval training.
Your taxes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
I did write down that they used the phrase. And I didn't know if this ever, I mean, this is in my head from yeah. the time, but I didn't realize anyone ever actually used it. But the phrase, that's gotta hurt.
Oh, was that in the movie?
Was in there multiple times. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. That must have been a big catchphrase in the late
yeah,
90s.
Yeah, or maybe it became one because of this movie. That's what I couldn't remember.
Well, sure. You know what I loved when I was done? It said, if you, customers who watched
oh,
Chairman
yeah.
of the Board, the movies.
This is going to screw up our algorithms.
Absolutely. It's going to screw up my wife's algorithm because it's suggesting Blues Brothers 2000, The Love Guru.
Yes.
Something called Shanghai Noon. And I looked up the director. You know what he went on to direct?
What?
Inspector Gadget 2.
Oh, he's a gadget guy.
Yes. Beverly Hills Chihuahua 2. Jingle All the Way 2.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I mean, technically, he should have directed Chairman of the Board, too.
Yeah.
But
this was how he earned his place.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he did some Hallmark Christmas movies around there, which is also perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was impressed that three people had written this movie. That was the
is that true?
The takeaway I had. Yes.
It was a group project.
It was, yeah. And maybe it was a too many cooks situation.
Right.
A lot of hothead personalities.
Right. Yeah.
Wanting their artistic vision.
Maybe they should remake it and just have one writer and it'll.
Mm-hmm. It could be remade. Yeah. I wonder who would be the modern day Carrot Top.
We could write the sequel. Why don't we agree to do that right now? Another bad. Just like we agreed to watch this, now we're, let's agree to remake it.
Yeah, Chairman of the Board 2.
I don't know who that movie was made for. It wasn't for kids because there's a lot of dirty
people who are hard of hearing. Yeah, there were a lot of sex jokes in it.
There was a lot of dirty stuff in there. So it wasn't kid friendly, but yet
I'm gonna say stoners.
Okay. Morphiners, maybe too.
Yeah.
It was
Well, we did watch it and we didn't have to pay for it. I saw that you can buy it for $3.99. Usually it's a rental for $3.99. Hey, I have an idea. If our listeners have ideas for bad movies we can watch next.
Oh, I'd love that.
You can either write them into us or leave a review on iTunes.
That would be great.
And tell us what awful movies we can enjoy.
And please, if you like our show, please review it and give it 5 stars. Please review it more generously than we reviewed Chairman of the Board.
Yes, we're angling for 15%.
Yes. Approval. That would be great.
And we didn't do a listener question this week because obviously we got carried away.
Yes.
But please keep submitting them. You can call us at 323-209-5303 or email us at insideconanpod@gmail.com.
We will continue to like you. Wait, I'm not allowed to say it.
You can say it. Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Sean Doherty. Our production coordinator is Lisa Byrne.
Executive produced by Joanna Solotaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco.
Engineered and mixed by Will Beckton.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
It's the Conan Show. Put on your hat. It's the Conan Show. Try on some spats. You're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf. It's Conan.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.